Let's go to the fan hotline, and we welcome in John Greco, who joins us this morning, former Browns guard, current Browns analyst. Hello, John.
Hey, Ken. Good morning.
What did you think of Shedeur Sanders on Friday?
I was fun. I was impressed. I was impressed mostly with, I thought he felt comfortable, looked comfortable in the pocket, and he kind of knew what was going on around him. And when I say that, there was on the one touchdown, there was a linebacker blitz, and he had panic. He didn't immediately bail out of the pocket. He knew the running back was going to be there to clean it up, kept his eyes downfield at his reads. That impressed me. And yeah, there was the fourth down where he was kind of, running around. And that's a rookie learning mistake, and something that, I know the coaches and everybody will be talking with him about, but I was really, really impressed with his poise and comfort in the pocket. And he's accurate. We kind of all knew that. He's delivering the ball, made some big plays, ran a little bit. It was exciting to watch. And I know, kind of all Browns fans' eyes were going to be on there to see what it would look like. And I think a lot of people were happy because they want to see him do well. And a lot of maybe not doubters, but people that were still kind of uncertain were maybe nudged more toward believers. And I was in the camp that, I like to see young quarterbacks do well. I mean, Ken and Anthony, I played for a million plus quarterbacks. And, it sucks when they get in there and it's their opportunity and they don't deliver. So anytime a young quarterback, especially a guy in his position, with his family, everything that was supposed to happen with him being drafted early and slipping to the spot that he did, and then he comes to Cleveland and the situation right now with the other injuries, I'm happy he did well.
What were your expectations going into that game? And would it be vastly different if we're talking about going up, for a full game against ones, whether it's preseason or regular season?
I wasn't sure. My expectations were, I don't even know if they were expectations more so than, I just didn't want to see, and we talked about it last week on your show, I didn't want to see a bunch of sloppy penalties and a lot of steps back to where it was like, my God, they can't even get out of the huddle. There's all these procedural penalties. The balls are on the ground all over the place. People aren't making plays. He's not getting protected. I would have hate to have been able to give him, not be able to give him a fair assessment because of things going on externally and around him. And I don't think that happened. So my expectations were, they were going to run the offense and it wasn't going to be something extravagant and this pages 600 in the playbook. It was going to be basic protections, basic handoff, something that he can have confidence in calling plays in the huddle and executing, and the guys around him could have the confidence in executing their job to put Shedeur in the best position to win and execute. And I thought that they did that. So those were my expectations, especially for the first preseason game. They've been in pads a few times. I know they did the joint practice, but it's a little bit more controlled. So it was nice to see those guys go out there and execute and put some points up.
John Greco with us right now on the hotline. When I watch preseason, I'm always sitting there wondering what's real. And someone like you who played in these types of games, and then you certainly know the difference between preseason and regular season, I imagine you had some takeaways from Shedeur's performance on what you think translates to actual starting quarterback play in NFL regular season games.
Yeah, great question and good point. And I think, when I played and you had someone that was a young quarterback, you wanted to see a lot of the things I talked about in the first kind of the opener, his comfort in the pocket. If there were flashes of other teams' helmets and jerseys around him, or if there was a guy pressuring that was scot-free and he needed to depend on a back to pick him up, did the quarterback panic and bail and just completely ditch what was going on and just run? I don't think he did that. I thought he stood in there. He took hits when he knew that they were coming and he delivered the ball. And as we know, guys, the competition is going to continue to amp up and amp up. And guys that, he's going to be seeing this season weren't in this game and that he's probably not seeing at these practices. So what does that mean? These windows are going to be becoming, you know, tighter and tighter. And he was accurate, and that's always been his thing. So we know that's there. And guys make great plays around him, so you're going to need some help with that as well. That was my mindset. When you walked out of that game, you were looking, did I do my job? Did I put everybody in the best chance to do their job well? And everybody could say, yes, we did. And when you look at the tape, you could say, okay, of course, everybody's out there making young guy mistakes, preseason mistakes, but how quickly does he accept it, correct it, move on, and not repeat the same errors? That is what veterans want to see. They want to see how he comes back and carries himself the next week of practice and into the next game, because does he build on some of that success or does he take a step back? And that's what everybody's going to be watching Saturday night against Philly.
John Greco joining us here on the Fan Hotline. So I asked a question. Let me ask you, do you want to see Dylan Gabriel badly now? Because I do, because my question is, what's he doing here now after I saw Shedeur Sanders play well?
I do want to see him. I do. I think Dylan Gabriel is a smart football player. I think a lot of the things that got him drafted where he was is because he's a leader. He's got a high football IQ. And, you know, obviously the size, that was the big question mark. And I know in kind of the limited reps that we've seen him before the injury and now that he's kind of coming back a little bit, we need to see some big steps. And I'm sure he's feeling the pressure, and we all know he is. How does he handle that? Does he, you know, kind of excel and is he able to overcome that? Or does he kind of dig himself deeper and deeper into a hole and make the decision very clear for everybody around him? So all we can ask for, guys, is this conversation going into week one and final cuts, that it's not clear. There's a lot of tough decisions to be made. And that's what a good football team has, is hard, tough decisions. Now, you wish it wasn't a quarterback with four or five guys on the roster that you're trying to trim down. And we're talking about second and third string guys. But, you know, the fact that he can come in there, hopefully his hamstring's right. Hopefully we see him in these joint practices and he's able to produce. Because, Ken, like you, I want to see more. I want to see things translate to the field, and that high football IQ, that he knows the playbook, sees defense as well. I want to see him start delivering on throws and scoring points.
So obviously they're going to be in Philadelphia for the two joint practices and then a game. But it seems like the coaches always say they get more out of the actual joint practices. You've been involved in these. You've talked in previous years about how guys would get into it. And, yeah, you're going up against the world champs. I mean, there's going to be some added lore, I think, to just being able to do that. I think the coaches absolutely love the spot they're in. What do you think the point is of these joint practices and the difference between that and the actual game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be big, especially for the guys that are going to be starting the year in September. You know, are they going to see a ton of action on Saturday night? Probably not. They're going to get more action in the team drills. One-on-ones are always a big showcase, because it's, you know, one of the few chances to where, you know, it's, even though everybody knows it's a passing situation, it's the offensive line, it's the defensive line, it's one-on-one, it's who wins. And you're going to see good on good. You know, you're going to see their starters against Myles Garrett, our starters, and vice versa. So it's, and then same with 7-on-7, one-on-ones on defense. It's going to be amped up. It's going to be physical. It's going to be a lot of emotion. And it's a lot of fun, to be honest with you. Now, I say that here sitting on my couch in my basement. When I was immersed in it, I was a nervous wreck and stressed out beyond belief. But it's really a time where you can kind of have fun knowing that, you know, hey, if you make a mistake, it's only practice. But you're going against their best, and it's your best on their best. And it really gives you an opportunity to showcase things for your team, your coaches, because if you win a one-on-one rep and your teammates see that, trust me, the juice is there and the excitement is there. And that's going to want to amp up things for your teammates. And I've been in situations where it's a multi-day thing, and day one, it's like, hey, the Browns whooped their ass. And every drill, we dominated, we won, and you felt like we won that day. And it was a big thing, and it mattered. And you went into that night and you were watching meetings and you were having your snack and you were like, okay, you know, we felt like we won. And then there was kind of like the message where it was like, now listen, tomorrow's not going to be the same. Their coaches are going to be up pulling their hair out, screaming and hollering all day. It was a different vibe over there, and they get a chance to, you know, have some redemption tomorrow, and it's always different. So that's why these multi-day ones are so fun, because it's like you get two cracks at it. So I'm curious to see how they react, how they do. The quarterbacks, everybody's going to be watching the quarterbacks, obviously, but I want to see some of our other guys, in particular some of these younger guys, go against, you know, defending Super Bowl champs, some Pro Bowl players, All-Pro players on offense and defense, and see how our team looks.
We have the great John Greco joining us on the show. So your depth chart is what again for quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, I know what their depth chart is. And
well, I want to know your depth chart, though, John. Yours. What's John's?
I mean, it's still Joe Flacco. I mean, it's still Joe Flacco. Are we talking week one or are we talking Saturday night?
I want to talk what you think. Yeah, week one. What you would do.
Well, what I would do week one is I would start Joe Flacco. Now here's the problem. What, you know, there's four guys. They're not going to have four active guys on the roster. So, and I don't think you're going to be able to hide any of either of these rookies, you know, cut them and try to bring them back on practice squad. I don't think that's going to happen. So that leaves the two guys at the top, and I know they love Kenny Pickett. But he's injured, and, you know, he's going to come back, and how does he look? And I understand he had a great day of practice yesterday. There's just so many – I hate to sound like I'm dancing around this question, but there's so much uncertainty. And if all things were equal, everybody was healthy, I'm going into the season, and I have to go Joe Flacco, the proven veteran as the starter in the gauntlet of the first month of the season. And then I hate to say, guys, but Shador's, you know, bumping up my list. Only because of the best, what is it? The best productivity is availability.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the saying? Mm-hmm. And he's there. He had the shoulders, you know, the arm soreness, but he's back. He's produced. We've seen him. And now these other two guys that are coming back from injuries, they could be, you know, have great days this week at practice. I know Kenny Pickett's already not playing, but Dylan Gabriel, I mean, he's got to show me something. So right now I'm saying Flacco, and then behind it is so jumbled. It's hard for me to make an assessment and a decision. But Shador did everything he could to argue his case for moving up that depth chart.
See, I put Shador at number two. But I want to see desperately Dylan Gabriel, because I need a justification for why he was taken in the third round. I'm not rooting against him, because I don't want him to be sitting there like a duck and everybody's just going, well, why did we take this guy in the third round when we have all these other holes to fill? Like, I hate the term smartest guys in the room, because I do think it's overused, but damn, I mean, this is, if he's not good, like, it's guilty as charged, is it not? Because you got other holes that you needed to fill.
Yeah, I agree with you. If he's not good, the thing about it is, if Shador continues to do well and he shines and does great, I mean we're all going to be happy, obviously. That's, mm-hmm. that's going to be terrific. But that just kind of masks the error if Dylan Gabriel doesn't work out and it just doesn't look good. Because all of the points you just made, they wasted a third-round pick. They could have allocated that pick toward another weapon, somebody on defense. You know, we can talk ad nauseum about where they should have done, what they should have done. So, you know, if both rookies look bad and it just doesn't work out, I think – you know, we've said enough about the situation with these draft picks and some of the moves in the building. But they're going to need one of them to do well. And obviously, I was a third-round pick, so there's some pressure. It's second round's obviously different, and it looks different. It's not like if it doesn't work out, they're like, oh, well, it's just a third-round pick. To your point, you draft a quarterback that high, you know, you're expecting him to be on the roster and be contributing and expect him to be a quality guy there for years to come. So yeah, there's a lot of pressure surrounding Dylan Gabriel right now, and I want to see him do well too. I'm with you. I don't want anybody to fail. I don't think anybody does. But he needs to, you know, get healthy, get that hamstring back to 100% so he can move, and he's got to be good.
I got one more. This isn't going to be fair, but I have to ask you, what do teammates think of speeding tickets?
You know, I don't think anybody cares. I got to be honest. I was on teams where guys got speeding tickets, and like to yourself, you're like, oh, God, what an idiot. And then in the same breath, you're like, You know, I've been known to, you know, eke up the miles per hour here and there within reason. I'm not going as fast as the person we're talking about. But I don't know. And when it starts hurting your team and it's a distraction, or if a guy's getting, you know, in trouble with the law and missing games and missing practices, then it becomes a big distraction. But, you know, things that headlines outside of the locker room, especially non-football related, if they're not missing time and missing work, I don't think anybody cares.
I hate it because there's like for regular Joes, there's no common ground. If I sit there and I make a big deal about it, then I'm being disingenuous. And then if I say it's no big deal, then I got a bunch of people saying, well, what if you were on the road? And it's like, okay. So yeah. it's an annoyance. Yeah, it's an inconvenience.
I'm not saying it's a big deal, but if Mitch or one of the sound engineers gets a speeding ticket at 92.3 The Fan, do you care?
No, he's got to take care of it on his own right.
Exactly. So that's kind of my thought. Am I downplaying it, saying it's not a big deal? No, it's you know, it's irresponsible, and somebody can get hurt, of course. But, you know, that's kind of something that you just have to take care of on your own, and it's your own business.
Well, Mitch is above the law in Strasburg, Ohio, apparently, so he doesn't get the tickets down there. John, thank you so much for the time. All the very best.
Guys, thank you. Great talking to you.
The great John Greco on the Fan Hotline. All right. We're in a very weird spot, you and I. And I think probably the afternoon show and the midday show as well, but certainly you and I, because I only care about you and I. A little bit of Jonathan and Nick. It's chock full of people who are Shador supporters that Cleveland's never dealt with any of this. And I go, man, we had Johnny Manziel and Baker Mayfield. This is my third rodeo. It's not my first. It's my third rodeo with all this. And so I'm used to the fever of another fan base coming in for a player and ripping the Browns, saying how bad the Browns are, saying how they wish their favorite player was not drafted by the Browns, and me going, well, let's see how this all goes. Now, I was very defensive of Johnny Manziel. You were not. The Baker scenario, I think that in the first couple of years, the first year was amazing. Second year, not so good. What a roller coaster. And then now we kind of wish we still had him. Probably not know kind of about it. And then this one, I'm like, hey, I like Shador. And you absolutely hate Shador. I go, I don't hate Shador. I like Shador. I wanted him to draft Shador. Let's take a swing at the guy. Not as bad as Jonathan wanted to draft him, but I certainly was happy that they took Shador. So it's this weird thing. And then today, and this is why I bring this up, I said that Shador was great. That's all I said. I thought he was great on Friday. And I got a lot of people. They might have taken the day off, but they are back in it. About you consider 60% completion percentage great? Aaron Pike on Twitter. Twitter reactions brought to you by Shavin Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. You consider 60% great in a ball that got his wide receiver hurt? And I go, whoa, wait a minute. He can get the ball. That pass did not hurt Luke Floria. And I asked you the question, do you think that he threw Luke Floria a hospital ball on
No,
Friday?
Not a hospital ball. He overthrew him to the point where I think that reach, isn't that what led to the injury? Was that not the injury play?
That was the injury
play. Yeah, had he put it in the breadbasket, I'm sure, you know, you would have caught him in stride.
Wait, I need doctors now. If you're a doctor and you're on your way in, please.
That's not what a medicine ball is. That's not when I hear that term. That's not the type of play.
Well, when you get a player hurt, it's always called a hospital ball.
Yeah, when a guy is barreling down,
medicine balls are different.
Yeah, when a defensive player, you throw the football, which I also think a lot of those are unfair too, because at times you got to thread the needle. You got to make a play. Like receivers are going to be in harm's way sometimes. I think the internet gets caught up in that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I don't use that term to describe that pass.
Let me play Floria. This is Friday night afterwards on that pass specifically.
Okay.
That was a nice play. You know, I saw 12 scramble, so I just decided to run to the open spot. He threw me a real nice ball, layered it right over the top, and I just had to make a play.
So you disagree that it was a nice ball that he laid right over the top?
Boom, there you go. What do you think, Tone?
Well, it was a tough throw to make because of the scramble and everything.
Because I heard people on this station this weekend.
There were places he could have put the ball.
I heard people
better.
On this station really? This weekend say that he put it in the perfect spot. It was the only spot that Luke Floria could get to it that no one else could get
to.
Well,
I joked on social media. I said he put it where only the outstretched arm could fully extend to catch the ball.
I got
to
tell you.
Yeah, he could have thrown the ball a foot shorter, but it's hard. You're running. There are like, if on a scale of 1 to 10 for Shador, it was a 9. It was not a 10.
But I don't think he got Luke Floria hurt because of the pass. I think if Luke Floria was 5'10", I think it probably would have been in the breadbasket instead of 5'7", 5'8". So, I mean, he...
So his parents got him hurt.
Yeah, I didn't say his parents got him hurt, but he's 5'7", he's 5'8".
I think you're misunderstanding me. I'm not assigning blame and... We like need saying, to blame somebody. Shador, you got him injured with the pass. Just
I asked you the question. You said it got
him
injured.
To assign him, but we will.
Him having to stretch his arm out, I think, probably did have something to do with it.
You would have power
if the
blame.
Ball would have been a little more perfectly placed, which is a lot to ask. I don't know how many quarterbacks could have just put it right there. And then, but we do say when a guy throws an amazing pass that just drops in over their helmet where a player doesn't extend, you're like, oh, that quarterback put it in a perfect spot. So this was... pretty good, but less than perfect,
but it
right?
probably was as perfect a spot as he could have put it in. And if you were talking about so Mike Evans out there, it probably would have been a perfect spot. So happens to be Luke Floria.
You're
he's
saying 5'8". It's an impossibility that the ball could have been put in any other spot than the one it was put in.
He hit the power rank music. You didn't even power rank anything.
I didn't hear
you
him.
Just powered right through. You powered through the power rank.
I didn't know what the power ranking was. I was talking, was and who? Then I heard someone else talking, and then I couldn't hear them because
oh,
I was...
It was who to blame. It's always it's, that. It's always...
It was who to blame.
Hit it again.
Nope.
Oh, not, see, I didn't do it this time, Owen. Wasn't me.
Well, I'll just say it's not always me.
When you say, know. But
he's
you see,
speaking to
this me. Is the slipperiest of wizards here, Owen. You know what he's doing because he, you're assigning me that I'm assigning blame to the quarterback. What, okay,
I gave
well, what
the
are you assigning?
I gave the quarterback a 9 out of 10. I said it was pretty good. It wasn't perfect. It was 9 out of 10.
Well, I don't know if it was going to be perfect.
I'm not
it probably
asking,
would have been perfect
way,
to a 6-foot wide receiver.
I'm not asking quarterbacks to be perfect 100% of the time. That's kind of a tough bar to hit.
I mean, it went right over the top. He had two defenders over there. Threw it, got it to Floria. Floria was able to one-hand it. It's a shame what happened to Luke Floria.
Yeah, what I'm
and
saying
I wish,
is...
And he, none of us wish it would have happened, obviously.
I think
obviously.
He probably would not have gotten injured if he didn't have to one-hand it. That's all I was saying. Do you agree?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
no,
know.
No, I don't know.
Fully.
I don't know if he. I have no idea. He's a wide receiver. Wide receivers. I'm sure this is not the first time he's had to reach for a football. Has he hurt himself in his hamstring every time he's had to reach for a football? Is this a known thing that when you stretch out to catch a football that you can hurt your hamstrings really bad? I don't know. I'm asking. Like now, I have to ask.
I
a
was
question.
Asking you,
doctors.
And you're coming back with me asking me questions.
Learned doctors in the city of Cleveland 216-474-0092. I need you to tell me. We're never going to get to the Drew Aller question. To hell with it. I need you to tell me whether or not that was. If you were watching that play, was that you want me to call my doctor? See whether or not that was
not
a play outstretching
really.
His arm.
I thought we were just having some nice conversation about it. I didn't think it was going
to
be.
Well, because
a,
I think it's asinine to sit
grilling.
There. And I thought it was asinine of the person listening to say that he got Luke Floria hurt. You made a play. You had to make a play.
Yeah, I don't think I think that
circumstances happen.
Yeah, I don't think I was saying like with some malicious attempt by the quarterback
no.
to get. And I certainly didn't call it a hospital ball. That's idiocy. But I also told
okay,
you.
Okay, I put that word in your mouth.
I don't think 90% of hospital balls are something that the quarterback should be destroyed over. I think sometimes you have to make tough throws over the middle. And
okay, but that's a generalization.
Receivers are going to get crushed.
That depends on the time and day. I mean, if it's practice, I don't know if you should be throwing hospital balls out there if everybody's going full go. But, you know, if you're in the NFC Championship game, what needs to be done is what needs to be done. And we'll talk about that 20 years down the line.
I also think a lot of hospital balls are called that when it's like, or the defensive player was terrific with their reaction and they had a beat on it and they read the play a little better. Like the quarterback can't account for all 11 guys on every play.
Well, you also see far fewer hospital balls. And we were much more reactionary to hospital balls. Like there were plenty of guys who threw them back in the day.
Well, yeah, because Steve far Atwater fewer was allowed to send people to the hospital back then.
Yeah.
Jack and Tatum, now we don't do that.
Jack Tatum literally sent everybody. Yeah. Steve Atwater.
And we loved it.
I watch old clips of John Lynch. I forgot how much of a headhunter John Lynch was. I totally forgot.
Romanowski was just there sending people to the hospital.
I totally forgot that John Lynch would decapitate people.
Ronnie like, Lott was sending ends. People to the hospital.
He was putting big tight ends to bed.
Yeah.
John Lynch was. Stuff that, like, you can say what you want. The new rules over this last decade plus, like, I see some of those things and you cringe now. You totally cringe over some of them hits that you see back in the day.
And at the time, they made NFL films lists, best ofs. They would show the reaction of the crowd.
They would just do an hour
teammates.
Of those.
And we loved it. That's part of what we loved about football. You're saying that's now more cringeworthy? Like, people don't love that about football? Because I think people still love the big hits.
I actually cringe now. I loved him at the time, and I look forward to him to the time, and now I'm like, oh, God.
I don't even cringe. I immediately look for the laundry.
You're looking for the flag.
Immediately.
Yeah.
No, I'm not talking about current plays. I'm talking about plays I see, like, on old NFL Films videos.
The things that you might have cheered before, you now cringe at.
Like, they had, remember that video, Total Impact, and Merton Hanks hosted it with Steve Young, and it was just people, it's just car crashes left and right. Like, now, like, I see that Steve Atwater hit in the Super Bowl. And I'm just like, oh, he's got headaches now. That's not good. So we gotta tackle differently. Okay. Well, then I misinterpreted you, Tone. I apologize. Camp schedule's coming out. We already knew Christmas Day, playing the Knicks at Madison Square Garden. But they will also open up their season against the Knicks at MSG on October 22nd. 7 p.m. in ESPN matchup. Lime is upset about that.
Yeah, I'm a little annoyed. I'll be honest. The reason being, like, the Knicks. I'm excited about matchups with the Knicks because I have said I think the Cavs are going to win the most regular season games. Most have said that in the Eastern Conference. Anybody talking about this? But the difference is I'll probably have with most of the hosts in town is right now. And who knows what variation of these teams will even be around. But if they're healthy and they're the teams we expect them to be, I would probably pick the Knicks to beat the Cavs in a series. We've gone over that to death. The reason why until Donovan Mitchell can show he can get past Jalen Brunson and just the...
Evan Mobley's looking solid lately.
In what?
In that picture.
Oh, was that him?
I was told that was Evan Mobley.
A bunch of people said fake.
That's fake?
I just read the comments. There's a bunch of people saying that's not
I've
him.
I've heard both.
And then people saying that's actually his face on Deshaun Watson's body.
What?
Go look at the comments. They're there. A bunch of people were like, that is not Evan Mobley or
his
build.
The arms did look a little bigger than what I would imagine Evan. But Evan Mobley did put on...
Yeah, how ripped do you need Evan to be? I mean, I watched Tim Duncan dominate the NBA for 15, 17 years, and he was...
That's just because his clothes were loose.
The upset are ripped.
Yeah, this is because he was the big jeans.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
I just on that real quick. Somebody asked Grok if it's real or not. Grok said no. The photo is not real. It's photoshopped.
God, I hate AI. You guys all want this AI stuff. Look what's happening.
I don't know how big I want Evan Mobley getting.
not that big. He looks like Miles Garrett.
Yeah. Like the way that he plays,
That's gonna be a great segment in the middle of January. Is Evan Mobley big enough or is he too big? 216-474-0092.
You can too many weights or not enough weights? Okay, so for whatever reason, like the Knicks and Cavs are gonna be a great matchup, and I just don't want to see them on opening night because it's gonna be so far removed. That game will be totally meaningless, especially Darius is not gonna be in that game, right? Because you're not rushing him back to play on opening night. From his injury. I mean, he just talked about having nine toes in the playoff run and how it would have been nice to have a 10th toe. So he got surgery. He's not going to be ready for that game. So that game means nothing towards the end of the year when we're going to be sizing up these teams. And I would argue probably Christmas Day is not going to mean all that much. That's still so early in the season. So that's two of the matchups against the Knicks. I would rather have them, slated later in the year. Now, I guess you could also argue, well, yeah, but they probably won't be healthy when they play. This is your best chance earlier in the year to get these teams as healthy as they can be. Okay, I understand that, too. It's just I won't factor them in. I'm not going to factor in a late October meeting.
The
NBA has
told
teams.
Me to not care about health anymore. But, right? And if there's guys healthy or if they're playing a marquee matchup or whatever, I just expect that at any moment, Donovan Mitchell could miss a game because they need to rest him.
Well, that might be my issue with the other thing. I agree with what you're saying about the opener of the season. I think that's a great point. I want to take it a step further. I go to the October 27th game where they play at Detroit, and that's a Peacock exclusive game.
Ooh.
So the issue of this is you tell me that the regular season matters less and less to the general fan. And I think to a Cavs fan. Now, how many games did you win last year? 66 games did they win? I forgot the number already. They won over 60 games last year. You got bounced in the second round. I already got people saying, good luck getting me to care about the regular season. 64. All right. 64 games. So they won 64 games. Could've they get bounced more, in the yeah. second round. They could have won more, but they didn't. But they still, the same result was the same. So now the regular season really doesn't matter to anybody. So now you want the regular season to matter, but you put it on a streaming platform.
That's not going to be on NBC. It's going to be Peacock only.
It's Peacock exclusive is what it says here. So if you're going to put them Peacock exclusive, that means that somebody's going to have to pay for that. Well, if you don't care about the regular season of the NBA, you're not going to pay for it unless you already have Peacock. The other issue that I might have with it is that you have a dedicated audience that does watch those regular season games. There are hardcore NBA fans out there, hardcore NBA fans who are first listening to this show. Guys like Justin Rowan. Now, he's a podcaster, but there are people who listen to his podcast and they are NBA first fans. So you turn around and just make them pay for it? So we're either going to make people go find it, which is already tough enough as we've seen with the Guardians, and you've had several weekends now, or at least a couple weekends now, where Tubi, Roku, Apple TV, Sony, all these other places, and it's hard to find them. And then I get to the NBA and I'm going to go, okay, you either make them find them, which they really don't want to look in the first place, or the people who do want to look, now you're going to make them pay extra.
Well, I don't have a problem with them make them pay because you're going to pay no money. Basketball's on cable. So even if you're watching, even if you knew you were going to the former regional network, right, and you knew it was there, you're still paying the cable that. You're right, though, having to go find another and an app thing, an app and then an ESPN, and then they're going to have, you know, I'm not sure what network they'll be on the regular season this year, but they'll have their regular games against Detroit in the regular season that'll just be played there. There is no TNT anymore, right? So that's where the NBC is taking over. But It's tough to follow exactly where they're at every night, and I can't just go to one centralized location and watch them like I can with the Guardians right now. Say what you want about how the TV contract screwed the payroll. At least I know for the majority of their season, I can go to that app that I have paid for and I can watch the games there and I don't have to worry about flipping around to find it.
But the biggest thing is Rob Manfred himself has said we're on too many different things that people have to go find. We have to start to centralize it and bottleneck it. When it comes to the NBA, wasn't it they have seven different services that you could be looking at? And the NFL is a different entity. You could always say the NFL. People will always go find the NFL. People will always go find football. That's why, like, when guys were upset last week about Big Noon Kickoff and I pissed everybody off, I go, guys, we're on their schedule. They can play it at any time they want. They've decided that their revenue is going to come from Big Noon, and you're going to go watch it no matter what. You're not going to have some protest.
Now,
you're not
going to
not watch Ohio State. And it's the same thing with the NFL. The NFL can have their games anytime they want. People will go watch it. But the other two sports, you kind of got to make it a little bit convenient for everybody.
Now, the NFL has, the last 2 years, done a streaming-only wild card game. And the ratings are massive for streaming, much less than the others. So there were people that weren't willing to jump through those hoops. Bars had huge problems. I mean, bars, they, you know, unless they're in that home market, they're not thinking all week, hey, we got to have the wild card football game on, even though the moment that game starts, everybody in the bar is like, hey, where's the NFL football game? Hold on, let me figure it out. Does anybody have a password? Got to get it on the smart TV. Like that is an inconvenience even for the NFL. But as you saw, the numbers still show that yes, people did eventually jump through the hoops to watch those games.
Coming up at 9:01, trust your eyes before you overreact. And at 9:21, can I answer that Drew Aller question? Do you even remember the Drew Aller question?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
All right.